you should, you know, be proud of the work you do, and you should have the time to build it. And by the way, if you build one thing in your entire career that you're proud of, you did it. I mean, you know, you're super lucky. That's the way it goes.
Good day, listeners. Today we have a special edition of the Designers FM podcast. We have no interview, but we have a panel discussion around a topic that is dear to every designer's heart. And the topic is, should designers code? On the panel today, we have Andre Herasimchuk. Andre, welcome. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself before we start going?
Sure. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you guys again here in a lovely Amsterdam. A little bit about me. Well, I've been designing software. I'm a dinosaur now. I've been designing software since 1990, which is either really good or really unfortunate, depending on your point of view. In the past, I've done a few things. I was the lead designer on Photoshop, Illustrator, and InDesign in the 90s. So I helped design the Creative Suite, the beginnings of the Creative Suite, which has now become the Creative Cloud. I had a studio in Silicon Valley for a few years called Involution Studios, where I was the chief design officer. And I led the design teams at places like Twitter and Yahoo. And I also was the first employee for Figma, and I helped get Figma off the ground. And these days I'm in Amsterdam, and I've been working at booking.com for the past 4 years.
Cool. Welcome. Happy to have you on the show. So we go on to the next member of our panel, Thomas Luljuray. We know from your previous episode a little bit more about you, so we'll skip the introductions. So people have to listen to the first podcast to get to know you, which is always good.
I also avoid the contrast between Andre's intro and mine, so that's very much appreciated.
And then the final member, you can hear him already, David Bullock. David, welcome. Hello. I don't think you'll need an introduction as well.
That's probably because we've heard all about you.
Yeah, we've heard all about you in the previous one. So I'd like to start with the opening statements from everyone. Since Bullock, we're at UU now, do you want to start? Should designers code? ?
Well, I give you my like TLDR version. I'm definitely appreciative of all of the effort that I've put in the past, but do I code now? Do I need to know it? I don't think it's relevant to anything I've been doing for the past 2 years. So, you know, the short answer is no. But we can get into why later.
Yeah, I think the question itself is broken. I actually think it should be three questions. It's should designers code, as in should they be doing the work? Should they understand how to code is a different question. And should businesses actually want them to code? I think the answer is generally no. Businesses should not want them to code. No, they shouldn't have to code. They shouldn't have to do the work. But I think that yes, it helps if they do understand the work. And that's my TLDR.
And let's finish off with Andre then. What's your TLDR?
Yes.
Okay. And do you want to respond to any of the previous statements?
No, I mean, yeah, to some degree, the question is a little bit broken. That's fine, though. I mean, we can use the question as a way to talk about it, but let's see. Thomas' framing is actually pretty good, whether it's write code, learn code, understand code. Those are good distinctions. There's also the distinction of what kind of code we're talking about. Yeah. I definitely feel a lot of designers fall into the trap that scripting is code. And scripting is, generally speaking, things like HTML and CSS, where you're doing structural things and kind of skeletal things, but you're not doing logical things or behavioral things. So when I think of coding, I definitely think of behavioral things and logical things. And that's the reason why I would put the answer to yes, because it's definitely more important to understand that and learn that. Writing it is definitely the tough part. Whether you need to do that in your job is one thing or not, but you should aim to learn to write some of it. So yeah, that's the TLDR. I think we can get into more detail about that as we discuss this, but I also think we need to frame what the word code means.
Yeah, I think that the logic behind it, I think that's a really good area that we could maybe look into. When you think about programming languages in themselves, when they're written in a way that was supposed to be human, code that is structured in the way that a sentence would be, if this person walks into a store, they buy a bagel, something happens, you know, they feel they're not hungry anymore. That's kind of like a human way of looking at it, and that's how code languages are kind of structured. We tend to difference those things in our minds as, okay, this is code, this is completely different. But I think the logic of it has nothing to do with actually writing the code, but being able to think in that way could be a way of looking at it.
What I hear you say when you say that is that there's a distinction between thinking and writing. So if you look at languages in general, like English yeah. versus Dutch versus Russian versus Cantonese or something like that, you learn to think. And there's a lot of studies and research done around this. I need to dive into more of it, where the thinking concept and the expression of it in language really kind of formulates how your brain works, especially logically. So there's the thinking of it, and then there's the act of writing it. The act of writing it, I think, is what people get stuck on, because the act of writing it is sometimes the flavor of the month, whether it's you know, Pascal or C++ or Objective-C or even JavaScript. They're all different and they all have different features, which is where you get stuck in the learning part. But to your point, I think, yeah, there is something about being able to think at an abstraction level, which is super important.
I don't know. My feeling is that it definitely, and I know from personal experience, it definitely helps if you understand, and you talk about the at the abstract level, if you understand how code works, it does make you a better designer. But that also doesn't mean that you need to know how to code to be a good designer. And I think that's an extremely important distinction. You will inherently learn the things you need to learn just by doing the job, working with developers and communicating. And you don't actually know have to know how to do it. But if you do know, it does help and it saves everyone a little bit of time. But it will come. It will come regardless. And when I say the question is broken, I also feel that it's a very antiquated question. It's not something that people, at least in my experience, people have expected of mobile designers, app designers, right? It's something, it seems to be a remnant from web, should designers code, because it was a more linear, I guess, coding language. But you know, now we have Android, you have iOS. I never, ever, ever hear anyone say, and maybe you guys have a different experience, should designers know how to code for iOS, for example? I've never heard it.
Well, let me put your feet to the fire a little bit on this. There's two directions I would like to take that train of thought, but I'm going to start with the first one, which is, are there good designers? Are there great designers? And are there exceptional designers? Or is good the ceiling in your mind? Or what's the ceiling in your mind? Let me just put it that way.
You need to elaborate a little bit on that one, please.
So if you were to hire a team of designers and whatnot, well, let's take it back. I'm going to use a sports analogy. Sorry.
We were waiting for this.
Yeah, I know. What's the over under on that one? Just one, probably. No. So if you look at like a recent special that was on Netflix that I've been watching during the pandemic, which is awesome. It's called The Last Dance. It's about the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan. So Michael Jordan is what I would frame as an exceptional basketball player. The rest of his team, like Pippen, those guys, were great, close to exceptional. And then there are good basketball players. So do you accept that framing and levels when I talk about, you know, designers at different levels?
Of course, and such is life. I think that's the case anywhere, but they didn't ask Michael Jordan to build the stadium or clean the floors or do anything else but play basketball.
Yeah, but Michael Jordan definitely does the work.
Indeed he does. Indeed he does, yeah, but he does his work.
Yeah, but coding is, you know, he does more than just his work. He does lots of work. My point is that I would say that if you want to be an exceptional designer, then yes, you need to learn how to code. If you want to be great, yeah, maybe you need to just understand it. And if you want to be good, you know, you can still just do your thing. But that's probably where I think we get stuck, is that it's actually totally okay to be a good designer. There's nothing wrong with being a good designer. That's great. So I would just go down that path. Is like, if you want to be exceptional, if you want to be like a Michael Jordan or a Prince, or, you know, playing music or any other kind of thing, you actually have to go deeper. And going deeper in our profession is the code itself and the actual thinking behind how it works.
Yeah. I want to take it back a little bit and go into the discussion of what are the pros and cons of having the skill of coding as a designer. Thomas, what do you think the cons are of having to code on the design job?
Yeah, there are no cons to knowing how to code. None whatsoever. They're all pluses, every single one of them. The cons to actually doing it, if you are coding, who's doing the designing? If you have a system in place, a design process, a system in place with your workplace where you have designers going through a design process, they're doing their research, they're doing their designing, the ideation, they're validating, they're testing, going through the routine of actually solving problems and delivering real value, and you suddenly ask them to stop doing that and code, what happens to your design process? Is it optimized? Yeah. Are you getting the most out of it while you have these people coding, doing something that is not their full-time profession?
Yeah, so it's basically a time thing.
Well, it's not just a time thing. It's a specialization thing. It is getting the best out of your resources, and it's a process thing in my mind as well. What kind of a process are you following? Maybe you have a system in place, and it could happen where you actually have resourced it so that people can be coding and the design process doesn't suffer. Possible, but I still think not optimal.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually going to make a very similar con to Toma there. I think, especially from experience, you know, the times when, you know, maybe a Booking or a previous company where there's been more of a push at the start of Booking or a previous company when I had less design work to do, I would kind of get into code just because it would seem to be something that the company needed at the time. And I can honestly say the work that was done was beneficial, but it was a resource thing. You know, we were lacking the resources at a smaller company like that. And the other thing is, when it actually comes to design, my brain could not function as a designer. So I would need a week before I could get back into it. I felt like I was a different person, if I'm honest. And being able to split your brain like that is okay, but one will suffer. So if I've been hired specifically as a designer, do you want me to code? No, you want me to focus on the job that I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay. Andre, do you think that because coding and designing potentially tap into two very different kinds of intelligence, like logical, mathematical versus spatial versus whatever, that it hurts doing both at the same time? Or do you think that it helps become a better designer?
I think there's a bit of a false dichotomy going on here. I don't tend to think there are these distinctions that are you all are describing. At least that's not how I approach it or how I think of it. I feel like they feed each other in different ways, and sometimes you experience one or the other. But if you get into a flow, you don't generally start to notice the difference between logical distinctions and systemic decisions and different thinking and spatial versus visual, etc. Because I'll go back to that concept of levels of what you want to be. And because it's been the pandemic and I've been spending way too much time on YouTube and way too much time on Netflix, you know, I've been noticing and watching, there's this Swedish guy who's the lead person of a thing called Winter Catan. And he's been making this thing called the Marble X Machine. And this guy is insane. He is literally insane. And he's a musician. Knows everything about music theory, but he's been building his own Marble X machine, designing it and building it with people who've been helping him. And it's incredible to watch. He's been doing it for like 2 or 3 years. Now he has a lot of time on his hands. And so what I see is the problems of distinctions in like a corporate environment. Do you have time to do these things? And I would definitely say no, designers don't have the time to do these things in a corporate environment. But in a personal environment, hell yeah, I want as much control as I can get. You know, if I'm working on something that's more personal to me, then I think it gets a little bit different. You know, there's also this kid named Jacob Collier. I don't know if you've seen him, this musician who mixes these crazy sessions with harmonies and things like that. He just won Grammys for albums recently. And he goes through his Logic Pro sessions where he's actually layering like 656 tracks in Logic that he's done, that he's all doing himself.
That's a lot of tracks.
Yeah. And so I think to myself, like, I hear what you guys are saying, but I always think it's good to push. You know, you may never reach the exceptional. But if you don't aim for the fence, you know, you're never gonna hit that home run. You just gotta go for
number
it.
Number two.
You gotta push it. So number two. I think we spend too much time on the success part and not the activity part. And to me, it's the activity, not the result. I'm worried about what the activity is, not what the end result is. However, in a corporate environment, I know the result matters, which is unfortunate.
I read this quote the other day where one person said, designers think in possibilities and developers think in probabilities. And I do believe that if you have the time at hand, then knowing both and being good at both, like, you can excel at your job. But in a corporate environment where productivity is essential and they want you to do as much as you can.
That raises a question for me. How good can you be at both? And I'm curious as to all of your experience, you, Andre, having, you know, been around for a very long time, how good can you actually get at both? Because my experience is that the designers I've known that are really good coders haven't actually been that good at design. That's not to say they've been horrible, but, you know, they've never reached the kind of potential that they perhaps could have if they actually focused on design alone. So what's your experience with that?
Maybe a good anecdote again from The Last Dance. At some point, Michael Jordan switches from basketball to baseball. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that his physical therapist says that his body needs to adjust to baseball because it's completely different sports. Do you think there's an analogy there that is also that you train your mind to do certain things super efficient when you're designing versus being an engineer that you have to get used to again when you switch to the other part?
No, I actually think the analogy holds that switching from basketball to baseball is more like switching from Pascal to C++. That's where the, okay, the structural and the features are different, and you have to learn those pieces. That's just my take on it.
Okay.
But to then to answer Toma real quick, based on my experience, when I was given the time to work with a small team and do the things that I wanted to do, I did better work and I felt better. My problem is that I've been chasing the almighty dollar in my entire career, where I got away from that and started to do what the corporation said I needed to do, which is these days it's gotten to be 2-week cycles, which is crazy. So time cycles back in the 90s when designing then, you know, things would take a year, 2 years of time to build. And it was great. And these days people say, well, if you take 2 years to build something, what if you're wrong? And I usually reply, well, then you're not very good. It's like, you know, that's a poorly framed negative proposition. You should assume that people are good and they can do their jobs well, they can do the research and iteration, and that they will build something good. But if you inherently believe that they can't, and you say you have to do things quickly so that they can fail fast, well, the result you get is failure. You get a lot of failure, and that's silly in my position. So yeah, I'm ambivalent answering your question, Toma, because I actually believe it's possible, but the context has to be there. And you and a lot of the other designers of these past decade or two have, unfortunately, in my opinion, have been robbed of what real schedules and real time should look like. You should, you know, be proud of the work you do, and you should have the time to build it. And by the way, if you build one thing in your entire career that you're proud of, you did it. I mean, you know, you're super lucky. That's the way it goes. You know, how many bands and musicians go out there and make the number of albums that the Beatles have? You know, one or two, really. It's really hard. You have to have a lot of luck involved as well, too. So anyway, that's a long-winded answer.
I'm in love with everything Andre just said, truly. And I feel it, and I love it, and I agree with it. But it still doesn't convince me that designers should code. Right. Like hearing that, yes, I agree about the cycles. I agree about the corporate environments, everything, but nothing in what you just said makes me believe that I need to code to be able to make that an actual realization.
That's the framing of the question. So the question is, should designers code? Mm. And you just replaced it the word need. Should designers need to code? And then you also use, should designers learn to code? Should designers write code, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think the question is it's missing a verb. And if you said the word need, I would say absolutely not. At the same time, can you be an exceptional musician without music theory? I don't know. I don't know anybody who is. Can you be an exceptional musician without playing 10 instruments like Prince can? Well, I think we can clearly say that most composers from the classical era probably are exceptional, and they didn't know how to play every single instrument. So I think there's lots of things going on there in your question, in the way it, but clearly the question is missing a word. And I don't know if we want to insert a word there. I don't know if it's good. I actually like the concept of hearing what people hear when they hear that question, quite frankly, because you can kind of see inherent biases or context or framing or experience kind of coming through in their answers, which is good. It keeps the conversation flowing, which is nice.
I have a couple of thoughts. One, would any of us think less of a designer because they couldn't code? I think it's my first question. Or don't know, not couldn't code, but maybe don't understand code or don't know much about code.
I think in a lot of ways, when you experience a designer that hasn't learned the theory behind code, you can see it in their designs. You can tell by the way their files are structured and the way they solve design problems that they don't think about the engineering aspect of what it takes to actually deliver these designs. So to that question that you answered, Toma, would you think less of a designer if they didn't code? I would think less of a designer if they didn't learn the theory behind code, because it makes them less of a designer. If a designer doesn't know what user feedback or research means, then yes, they would mean less of a designer. I think it's the same for code.
Yeah, I'm going to back up David. I mean, I agree, totally agree. I wouldn't necessarily judge them on the face, but I can see it. And it's not just the code. To David's point, I can see when they don't understand research sides of things or behavioral sides of things. I can see it in the work. Am I judging them at that point? Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, when I look through portfolios, I can right out of the gate see these things immediately. Either the way a designer describes what they did or what they did, or especially when the designer says, well, the engineers, you know, didn't do what the design said there. It's just like, okay, well, there's a problem. So I don't judge them per se, but as much, I don't try to judge them, but I'm definitely judging them because I can see it in the work. And it's not, to David's point, it's not about doing the code, it's about learning the concepts behind it, because you can see when they're out of sync.
Very impossible to disagree with that. But I will say that if a designer is following a process and they are communicating with their team from the earliest stages right through their design process, from wireframes to actual, you know, getting things in Figma, and the entire cycle is actually collaborative, those things, in my opinion, are overcome, right? And that's what I alluded to at the start. It's a learning experience. And the devs will tell them, but this, and that. And then they'll start to learn things. And I mean, over a course of 5 years of doing this daily, even if they don't understand a line of code, you know, directly, they will still understand conceptually. They will have learned conceptually how it should work. Will they not?
Yes and no. So I think you can take that at levels. So there's different levels of how that, how much you learn through that process. To give you a silly example, I'm going to give you somewhat of a superficial example. This probably only makes sense to me, which is you can just cut this out then. I was watching a conversation recently where somebody on the design side was complaining that Figma wasn't showing a screenshot properly. It was like showing it empty, blah, blah, blah. And kind of dug into it a little bit more and dug into it a little more. It turns out that they took a screenshot of a mobile phone that was something like 60,000 pixels tall. I don't remember what it is. And it was some absurd number. And I noticed that. I said, in the way computers work, you know, the way memory works, a bunch of other things work, that's not how you can do that. And Figma is probably just relying on the GL chip. In fact, I know it is. And they can't display things unless it's been broken up into tiles, yada, yada. And the designer was kind of responded to me and said, well, that's just silly. And I was like, okay, yeah, clearly this person doesn't understand at all the stuff that they're working on. They're designing something on the hardware and the way that things work, and they just kind of expect unicorns to happen. Now, that's a superficial example. But when you go down the rabbit hole, you do go down the rabbit hole to where you should actually understand how the damn machine works. Now, to go down a tangent before, earlier, is this is going to be a little bit philosophical to some degree. Do you think Donald Trump would be elected as the US president if the designers at Facebook knew anything about how behavior worked?
Good one.
Like, did they do their homework when they made the code? Did they just design something and thought, oh, well, this is just cool? Did they think anything about how the logic, the behavioral structures, when people talk about how the algorithm works, they talk about the algorithm. It's like the algorithm is not a magical device. It's thought up by human beings. These things are all put together by people. They're not some, like, you know, something down on high. So to the point that you raise, I would speculate that if designers really knew their shit, they would avoid doing the kinds of things that we're now seeing in the world with all these, the software and the engineers, by the way. It's not just the designers, it's the engineers. And obviously, of course, the people are incentivizing them to build things that are not great. But when you look at the way software code works, it's no accident that, you know, people can game the system. People who know how the code works are gaming the things that are being designed by people who don't know how it works.
I agree. I've been ranting on Twitter the last couple of weeks. Every time I see an algorithm fuck up, I post this pre-written tweet which says, every person who's going to work on AI should read Weapons of Math Destruction by Cathy O'Neill. And I think it's the same discussion as we're having now. Should designers code? Should machine learning engineers do an ethics class before they're going to work on it? Yes, because right. I think that's the worst part about everyone in tech, is that they think that their work is just doing the work, like doing the production work. And it's so much more. It's like it's ethics. It's understanding how the system works. Like, if you look at this, the role of a service designer now, which should be like full spectrum, you have to know what all these things mean, because otherwise you're going to end up building something like Facebook that has really potential damage in it.
Interesting question then. Should developers design?
So the question was, should developers design, right? It isn't, should developers know the theory behind design? So I would encourage every developer to know the theory of design. I do believe that as much of it is a back and forth process and it's teamwork, it still is that design is the creation of a plan. So you plan first and then you execute. So if a developer is going to have to go back to the planning phase, then clearly something's wrong. I would encourage them, but I don't think they should.
The quick answer to this is that developers are already designers in a way, because if you look at really well-structured code, it's designed properly. So design is the act of making, effectively, just that we're using the word design on the interaction and the facade part, if you will, versus the engine part. The second answer to that question for me, though, is that for a long time, I used to believe in the three-legged stool. You know, there's business, there's product, there's tech. Excuse me, there's design, product, and tech. And I used to follow that pattern a lot and whatnot. And over the past decade, I've come to my new belief, which I may change in the next 10 to 20 years if things change for me. But my new way of thinking about it is that design and engineering, especially in software, are literally the two sides of the same coin. They are not separated. They're not a stool. They're nothing. They're literally the same object, and they're just on two different sides of it. The product side and the business side is kind of the context in which all this stuff works, but it's not inherently whatsoever in the actual making of what is going on. In fact, when product people get involved in the making side of it, they tend to screw everything up, and you get things like Facebook. So my answer there is that, yes, designers and engineers are actually doing the same thing. One, they're just doing it in different ways. And like any good marriage, they do it collaboratively. But they're working on the same thing.
One of the best developers I ever worked with, his design theory was incredible. We had this kind of mutual agreement that we both respected each other's knowledge, but we didn't necessarily touch on anyone's work either. So when we did like a couple of projects together, we both knew exactly what we were going to do. But having that kind of mutual understanding and theory-wise, we were on the same page. We could move together so much quicker. So it did feel like we were working on the same project. It wasn't like, here's my work and here's your work. It felt like we owned it together as a team. But I can honestly say his design theory was incredible. And then if we have more developers like that, I would start putting them in that exceptional bucket.
I mean, we've all worked with every kind of developer there is, probably. You know, the ones that are kind of creatively minded and understand design. We've worked with the ones that have absolutely no idea about design and they're just all about the code. I've also worked with outsourcing in India, where I don't know what they are. I just know that they do the job and will not go outside of the lines. They will not give feedback. They will just do exactly what they're supposed to do. And I can say without question that the devs that have an understanding and appreciation of design have been my favorites to work with. And collectively, we've gotten very, very good results. And I also see it on the flip side, where if I design something with an understanding of how it's going to be built, I always get a lot of love for it and a lot of appreciation because I've made their life easier, always. And it definitely builds a wonderful collaborative environment. So undoubtedly, I agree with what Andre said, two sides of the same coin. But I will say that I worked with one dev, front-end guy, who really understood design. He always gave me very good feedback. My work was always better because of him. But I saw him design a project, a personal project on his own once, and it was absolutely horrible, really horrible. It's probably the equivalent of me having, you know, coding one of my own designs. So there's always that fine line, right? We really need each other, but there's a little bit of gray in between.
Can I say something for the record for this podcast? I hate coding. just want to make sure everybody's very clear about that part. Actually, I despise it. Okay, I said it. There, we can move on.
Yeah, so I think to go a little bit more into like a practical discussion, because we've been talking about like in theory and philosophically, yes, I think everyone agrees that it's a great skill to have as designer, would make you better, blah, blah. Imagine this. You're listening to this podcast, you listen to a few other podcasts, and you have this internal discussion going on. Should I learn to code? Should I learn to design? Should I do both, given the fact that I don't have unlimited time because I also have other things to do? What kind of advice, given the present day, would you give such a person?
I had a similar thought in my mind, David, but it was more around if you were to structure a university course that would develop designers, it would grow designers, would you incorporate coding as a part of that course? And if so, to what extent?
Okay. Well, yeah, again, I'm a dinosaur in all of this. I've been doing this for far too long. But the nice thing is that I, having seen the length of time now, you know, when I started doing code, all there was black and white screens. Color screens happened when I was 21. So that was fun. I think designers today are far better off than where we were 30 years ago, 20 years ago. And definitely even 10 years ago. there are definitely two tools. Now, you know, people ask me this question all the time about what's the best design tool, blah, blah, blah. And I always say a pen and paper, like Photoshop, Illustrator, Sketch, Figma, all these things are production tools. They're means to an end. They're not the design tool. The design tool is your brain, and a pen and paper is how you express that in the world to start. However, having said that, if you want technical skills to execute the craft and actually also be able to start thinking and learning these things, there are two tools in the market right now that will give you both sides of the coin in a very collaborative and related fashion, and that is currently Figma and Framer. Figma, you know, I know a lot about it from the beginning. Evan and Dylan definitely built something that they wanted to build. Dylan especially had his eyes on the Google collaborative concepts, and he's also a gamer, so his idea about games and how collaboration works in games was also very much influenced into the tool. Evan was probably one of the best computer graphics programmers I'd met in since forever. Figma is probably going to be one of the better, if not the best, production tool for the graphic side of the fence. They're trying to do prototyping, and I would encourage them to stay away from that a little bit, because I think that's going to get away from their more interesting feature sets, which are going to be around research and collaboration than around prototyping. And I say that because the tool is very robust as it is. It took a long time to build, which I told them it would, and they didn't like that answer, but whatever. And it's got the best shot going forward. So there's that. Framer took the other things. I remember talking to Kuhn and Jorn about their tools when they started it. And I told them personally, you know, not that they listened to me, but I told them that they should just own code, like go all in with coding, because it's super important. And they hit the problem from a different direction. And Framer's got a lot of the logic and behavior stuff if you want it there. And it's starting to do some of the Figma things. And I kind of hope the two companies collaborate with each other and stay in their lanes a little bit better. I fear they're going to blend because that's what competition breeds, and they're going to try to fight it out. Either way, I think designers win. But if you teach the tools, if you can go deep on both of those tools, you will be very well equipped to build any kind of new product in the next decade. Now, you obviously have to learn how to think. You have to learn how to do research. You have to learn how to solve problems, et cetera, et cetera. But on the craft side of the fence, those two tools will give you the right amount of coding and behavioral concepts and the right amount of production, rendering, and thought process.
Cool. David?
So from my perspective, you know, if I was going to give designers some advice now, I would be like, definitely check out React and try and build something super simple, you know, like a simple layout. So here's an exercise that I did. I had this like really basic layout, and it was in React Native and React JS. So I tried to build the same thing. The benefits of this were trying to work on cross-platform products. So whether it's, so if you're covering mobile, web, and you're also doing Android and iOS, you know, can you get the same layout to kind of work? And it's not super complicated code. It's pretty easy to grasp, and it's all about the parity between native and web for Flexbox. So the question I wanted to ask Andre, can you tell everyone what you told me about Flexbox and what it was based on? Because that kind of really opened up, you know, when you talk about things like, you know, you need to understand how it works.
Yeah, so my understanding, I was not with the W3C crew when they did the Flexbox spec, but I mean, I know lots of people in that realm. My understanding is that they took the type systems from old. If I remember correctly, they were called tech. The type systems of old, there's a lot of people who thought about these things. When I say type systems, I mean how fonts lay out on a page from metal type to computers, etc. And then the notions of how type works. So if you take Japanese, it goes right to left, top to bottom, instead of left to right, top to bottom. Japanese and Asian characters are squares versus multiple widths and stuff like that. But anyway, if you take each letter and you put it inside of a box, you need to have all kinds of rules. Which direction it goes, which way it flows, when it breaks, how it breaks, does it spread the letters around? I mean, all the different things. Now, if you look at Flexbox, you'll see the exact same thing. Like Flex Start is not called start, or it's not called left, because in some languages like Arabic, it's the start is on the right. It's not on the left. And so they use all the terminology, the justification spacings. Like if you wanted to know how paragraphs spread and letters spread so that all the words are squared off, that's justification space between or something like that. I forget. But yeah, so if you look at Flexbox, it was basically taking the type systems and how old designers, older generations, solved laying out books. And you can do that because everything's in a box. Well, if everything's in a box and you look at CSS and HTML, you put everything in a box and suddenly, oh, okay. So when I saw Flexbox, I was like, oh, this is great. This is basically just taking the same rule set and applying, instead of letters, applying it to objects. And you, what do you get from that? You get magic. You get like, oh, all this crazy magical behavior suddenly appears. All this goes down the path, like everything is built on top of everything else, to the point where that's what I mean by going down and learning how to code, that kind of stuff. I had to learn those things and those rules because working on InDesign, I had to understand how book layout worked. And more importantly, I had to do it. I did a lot of research in Japan about how Japanese book layout worked because Japan was a very big market for Adobe. So I don't consider myself smarter than anybody. I was forced to learn it, quite frankly. And because if I didn't, I wouldn't be able to do my job. But yeah, so that's the kind of knowledge that when you dig into code and you dig into logical systems and behavior, you start to discover these things. And it makes it more relatable, I think. And it also gives you more power to see when things change in the future, whether they're truly different or whether they've been built on something that you understand at a deeper level and you can take advantage of in different ways.
Yeah. Thomas?
Yeah, it triggered a thought for me hearing Andre speak. So what happens within design is that we learn what our boundaries are. We tend to learn what our boundaries are within development, what's possible, what's a little bit too hard to do. Therefore, we try and stay within those boundaries and come out with something that's actually feasible, I guess, efficient for the business to actually develop. But then it hearing Andre speak, it made me wonder. You talk about Flexbox, and you say, oh, wow, this is possible. And that it broadens boundaries within your design function. Then it made me wonder, if you design with no boundaries, does that not push engineering to come out with new ways of doing things?
My experience has been that whenever I try to do that, reality smacks me down pretty hard. So I'll relay a little story. I don't think I'll get in trouble for this. I don't think I can get in trouble because whatever. In the early days of Figma, so literally it was Dylan, me, and Evan in the early days of Figma. I recognized in those two, because they were 23 at the time and I was 43 or something like that. They were 23, I was something like that. I can't remember how the age difference. It was roughly something like that. I think they're 27, 28 now. I saw in both of them an innocence that I remember having. I remember being 23, because when I was 23, I built and designed Collage, which was the layering product that got me my job at Adobe. I saw them in innocence, but Evan had this notion because he grew up on computer games and things like that. And more importantly, he grew up in a time when GL really took off, because GL used to be horrible back in the 90s. But because of the iPhone and all the games and all the things, GL got a lot of support from the developer community and got really big. So I saw in them the blue sky. And my job was to, at the start of it, my job, I think, was to bring some shape to the blue sky. So with Evan, I was able to do that pretty well. With Dylan, I was not as good. And that's largely because my personality tends to be more dogmatic and like, no, just because that's the way I come off. But they pushed through and they created something that was not just a riff on Sketch and Photoshop and Illustrator. They created something that had some big tweaks that caught everybody's imagination. And they were able to do that because they were being blue sky. And they were both very design influenced as well, by the way. They're not just engineering and business. They definitely care deeply about design stuff. So to that point, I would say, yes, it's good to not know your boundaries. I do think you should find people who have experience who will not smack you down so hard, but will also be careful that they'll at least warn you that you're about to get burned. Maybe they won't stop you, but they'll at least give you the warning. I definitely had a couple of those in my career, and that was very useful. So that's kind of a long-winded way to answer that. But I love the question. I also fear when people get burned.
Yeah, I want to make an analogy. I actually think it came from you, Andre, so correct me if I'm wrong. So I think you once told me that there's a great analogy between design and city design, like the way you structure a city. So going back to your question, Thomas, about like, doesn't that limit you when you know how stuff works? In some cases, I think you have to respect that there are certain rules because this is science. So things work like this, right? So if you take a traffic light, for instance, you can't put a traffic light on an intersection where one goes to green, where the other also goes to green. There are certain rules that you have to abide to because otherwise you end up killing people. Maybe this is what happened at Facebook or should have happened at Facebook when they designed the tool. So I think there is definitely an exploratory phase where working without boundaries is definitely a great way to kind of diverge into possibilities, but then really quickly after that, you have to converge again into something that abides with the rules of physics, science. Like, look at architecture. You don't want an architect to design something like, oh, I don't know if the physics will agree with this, but let's just build it and see what happens, right? So I think that there is a place and time for it, but it's in the exploratory phase and should be followed up quickly with converging.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. The way I tend to do that, and again, this is just my own personal character flaws, I tend to come off to people and designers, especially who I've managed in the past, as being dogmatic and telling them no. What I'm really trying to do is say, okay, this is an interesting idea. It could be potentially a great idea. Now make it work. And if you don't make it work, I have to fall back as my responsibility to the things that I do know that work. And so the problem for me I've always had is communicating in such a way that was told to me back, you know, in the 90s, taught to me by all the great engineers I worked with. They always used to tell me like, hey, you know, you can do whatever you want. You know, the sky's the limit, but just don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
And that literally meant do your homework, try all the different variations, make sure the research is in, make sure it's going to match the business case, make sure it's not going to crash, make sure this, just like everything you can check off, you have to check off, because if it crashes or if it loses data or if it breaks or if it gets Donald Trump elected, yeah, you fucked it up. So that's the way I was taught. And I don't know how to express that to younger designers in such a way that makes it sound like, you know, you're being held back. I know it comes off like that by me personally, and it's just my personality probably. But I definitely believe in that. Like, you should be able to do whatever you want, just don't fuck it up. And that's kind of like the way I feel about this question. Like, should designers code? Well, that's why I say yes, because the more you do it, the more you'll have knowledge at hand to not fuck it up. Does that mean you have to? I don't know. I don't know if I ever think about those kinds of things. I always just try to push and push and push. And the more I know about something, the more knowledge and stuff I have to make sure that I don't screw something up so bad that somebody might get fired, or it might, you know, cause damage to somebody's business, or you know, gives me a bad performance review, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So let me ask you the question, Andre. If you were starting your own business today, mm-hmm. would you look for designers that would code, or would you still hire separate devs and designers and probably look for designers that just understood code?
This is actually probably the same question I had when I had my own studio back in Silicon Valley. I look for one of two things. I either look for people who are already experts or for people who want to be experts. I don't mind in the middle. That doesn't bother me, but I tend to look for, if they don't know how to code, they at least have the thirst or desire. Whether they do it or not doesn't bother me, because that thirst or desire is important. If they already have it, then I know I can have a different discussion. Was that my dog? That was my dog. Sorry. but I tend to look for one of the two. I don't like people who are comfortable necessarily, I guess is the way to answer that. Comfort is fine. It's just, if I was doing a small business, I wouldn't look for that. If I was doing a big business, I would be fine.
But you wouldn't have your designers coding is the answer.
I did have my designers coding in my studio, but I also had my devs designing. It's one of those things where if you can have a small studio, I think it's great to do that. If you don't have to do that, that's fine. If you switch up on different projects, that's fine. Again, I mean, I think one of my favorite essays from Paul Rand is The Politics of Design. And he has a line, kind of like a throwaway line at the very end of it, where he talks about great design and whatnot. And not everyone can produce the number of amazing work by AM, and I'm forgetting the artist's name now, damn it. Paul Rand's design hero was a gentleman from the 20s, and he just loved his work. He thought all of his work was amazing. And the point of his essay at the end was that at the end of all of it, you know, you should just be happy with one good project. So when you hire these kinds of people from your own business, I'm not looking to make every project for a client a home run. If it happens, great. But, you know, so to produce really good work, you need people who can move in and out in different ways. Because good work is, that's why I was, again, getting back to the good, great, exceptional. Good work is very straightforward. You just got to show up and want to go for it. Great work takes a lot of effort and training. Exceptional is all of that from previously, and you got to get lucky. You got to get the timing. I mean, imagine Michael Jordan on a bad team. I mean, the guy got lucky. He had a super amazing cast of characters around him, and he had a great coach. And it was at a point in time where, you know, it was just like, that's also luck on top of all the talent and hard work.
Let's look at like the exceptional people. Let's look at Jimi Hendrix. You know, he was not taught by anybody. You know, he picked up a guitar. He played with the wrong hand.
Yeah, he played it backwards.
But he was absolutely exceptional, but no one taught him how to do it. And people like Eric Clapton were like, "Holy fuck, who is this guy? We're completely screwed now. And the way that Jimi Hendrix learned how to play guitar and how he, you know, the artist that he became to be, would he have become the same artist if he had learned classically? I guess it's less likely that you're going to become an exceptional artist from not. So to look at, like, you know, understanding how things work, you know, did Jimi Hendrix, did he know how these things work, or did he just kind of just go for it and really put himself into it? And did that help him bridge break the barriers of what's expected?
I've got his name, but there's a neurologist, I think it's a Dutch one, who did research what makes special people special. So he did it with like excellent musicians, with people in sports, people in business. And TLDR, what he found is that exceptional people in their craft just process things faster than other people. So in the case of Jimi Hendrix, he was just really good at processing the stuff that he did. Probably that's also why Michael Jordan was pretty good at baseball. He would be exceptional at baseball if that was the thing he did his whole life. Mm-hmm. Probably Messi or Johan Cruyff or the great chess player that I forgot his name. Probably if they'd done anything else, they would be excellent at their craft. I think that, going back to the levels that Andre mentioned, if you want to be excellent, then luck or genetics play a really big part in it. But if you're not exceptional, it's also fine. But definitely knowing how to code makes you a better designer.
Yeah, I can plus one that. It doesn't hurt, but I can say without a question that I've worked with many, many, many designers, including most of my current design team, which is 20-something large. And the vast majority of them don't know how to code. And we not only get the job done, we get the job done extremely well.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, working on a cross-platform team, you know, we've got two designers on it. We don't look at any code. And I think this is the kind of team that I'm really happy on working on. You know, we're focused on our design, we're focused on our craft, and that works really well. But, you know, we've got things like Figma and auto layouts. When you use these things, I'd really encourage every designer to start using this if they are using Figma. And when you start creating components in Figma, and it does feel like you're coding a little bit when you're using the, like, because it's kind of like Flexbox based, and the way the pattern works, it feels like you're coding a little bit. So I would still say get familiar with it, learn something, but don't code on the job.
Cool. Do you want to bring it on? Another sports analogy? Sorry.
No sports analogy. I already did too many. Yeah, I guess I would say good conversation. So thank you guys for this. What I would encourage people to do as well is try to be inspired. And if code, or you see something that somebody built that requires coding, inspires you, you should aim to do or go for it. And don't worry about whether you succeed or not. The act of going for it, and the act of learning, and the act of actually being inspired is probably the best thing. 30 years on, hopefully I'll be able to say this 60 years on, the biggest regrets I tend to have in my career are the ones where I did not follow through on the things that I wanted to try. Because, you know, tech changes, products change, things get cooler, things get fall away, but what you don't get is a second chance at certain things. And so if you are inspired, if you have some free time and you want to do it, you should do it. If you want to go paint, then go paint. If you want to learn how to play the guitar, then learn how to play the guitar. But I definitely encourage every person who's got a creative bone in their body, especially designers, to find a way to be inspired regardless. And I hope coding can inspire you to learn something new, because to your point, I think when you do things like this, you tend to become better. But you can say that about everything, like, you know, research. You can say that about learning how business and finance works. So yeah, that's what I would say is, like, should designers code? That's why I say the answer is yes. Not because I believe that that that's what is the reality, but because the process of it, to me, will yield a good result for people who are inspired and go for it regardless.
Cool. Thank you all for taking the time to discuss this topic that is, I think, a topic that's been going on for ages now.
At least since I was 20.
When life was black and white.
Exactly.
I think another good conclusion of this podcast is that the book, The Lean Startup, should have never been published.
Fuck that book.
Amen.
I'm into that.
So, yeah, if we have another discussion, definitely get you on the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for showing up. Listeners, yeah. I hope you've enjoyed this and you still like us after this. See you all next time and speak to you next time. And thank you all.
Take care. Be well.